listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes! It hits the back of the net. Oh, my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a head, son! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
Swansea so close to sinking Napoli as the Welsh side get a 0-0 draw against the Italian giants in their first leg of their Europa League knockout contest. Konoplyanka shines in the Ukraine as English eyes light up at the prospect of bringing him to the Premier League, and his penalty sinks Spurs in the opening leg of their Europa League encounter. We've got a busy weekend of action coming your way across Europe. But is it Major League Soccer that's making the headlines this weekend as the MLS buy Chivas USA out from Guadalajara and get set to rebrand but keep the franchise in Los Angeles? More on that later. Welcome to World Football Daily. I'm Oliver the Juice Wilson, bringing you the news and many views from around the world of football today. Joining me a little later on, as always, will be Rafa Gonzalez. We're going to have a quick look back at some of the Europa League action from this week, including a fantastic result for Swansea and Spurs on a disgusting pitch. Tim Sherwood saying that it was one of the worst pitches he's ever seen, not using as an excuse, though, apparently. But Tim, as soon as you say these sorts of things, it does make it sound like an excuse. Soldado, though, having a terrible night in front of goal. He's got no form at the moment in the Premier League. Is he going to be another foreign washout on the Premier League, or will Soldado be able to turn things around at Tottenham as Adebayor continues to hog all the headlines down at White Hart Lane? The perfect man, really, to ask about all this and more, you know, around the Premier League, the games coming up this weekend and the fallout from the European action from midweek, is our guest for today, who joins me on the show, ready and waiting right here early on World Football Daily's Friday edition. Joining us from The Times is a fantastic writer and a great person to have coming on the show every so often. Of course, it's the one, the only, Mr. Rory Smith, joining us here. Rory, a pleasure to have you on board, mate. How are you doing today?
I'm very well. That's quite a build-up. I'm not sure I can live up to that, to
well,
be honest.
As I said to you just off air a second ago, you know, you're on BT these days. You're doing TV, you're doing national newspapers, and dare I say it, newspapers with a fair bit of credibility left as well in The Times. So, I mean, you're a man who's busy about town with football these days, mate.
You're making me blush. I'm glad to know The Times has still got some credibility. We do our best. I'm sure it's dwindling, but yeah, it's still probably a little fragment of credibility left.
And I like to see you getting the TV experience in for, God forbid, the newspaper industry to completely collapse on itself as the digital age takes over. But I think that's a bigger topic for maybe a different show. We'll crack on with we'll crack on with the football talk for today. I guess a fantastic night last night for Swansea, Rory, against Napoli. I don't think anybody gave them much of a chance against the Italian giants.
Yeah, that's probably a little bit insulting to Swansea. I agree with you completely. I think a lot of people kind of thought that Napoli was steamrolling them. Having seen a lot of Napoli this season, they're a slightly funny side. They're very good at home, so I'd still make them favourites to go through. But they do seem to have this very un-Benitez-y lack of balance between defence and attack. He left Jorginho, who's signed from Verona, out of the Europa League squad list, who has kind of improved that a little bit. They are a work in progress. Napoli and Swansea, I think, you know, it was a hugely important night in their history, a really glamorous night in their history. They were always going to tear out of the blocks at a really high tempo, and they did, and it gave Napoli a lot of problems. And I'm sure Gary Monk will be slightly disappointed they didn't make their superiority count and at least get a one goal lead to take to Naples to defend. Because if you look at the teams who've lost at the San Paolo this season, it's fairly illustrious. think Napoli has to be favourites. But no, a great occasion for Swansea. Really, really wonderful to see them, to be honest, kind of getting the Premier League a little bit more credibility in Europe after a relatively bad week.
Do you put the performance down to the managerial boost at all that teams often get when one manager goes and a new gaffer comes in, everybody's trying to impress? Or is this just Swansea returning to the playing style and form of that we're used to have seeing from them in the Premier League over the last 18 months or so?
Yeah, I don't think Swansea were quite as bad as everyone was making out. The problem that Laudrup had is that his kind of whole approach to management is very laissez-faire, very laid back. And that works for a certain period of time. The problem is that when the results don't come, when the performances don't come, the players who have previously enjoyed your laissez-faire, relaxed approach start saying, well, results aren't working out, it's your fault because you're too laid back. And that then becomes kind of a cycle whereby the players blame the manager and the manager loses their faith and he can't pull it back. And that's why, if you look at Laudrup's career, he's had all these clubs for like a year, 18 months. It's at that point that they hit a difficult spell. The players think you're not doing enough, you're not proactive enough, and Laudrup can't react and everything kind of falls apart. So I think Swansea were always likely to kind of recover from that with a new manager whenever he came in. They all seem to really like Gary Monk. If you speak to people at Swansea, They think he's got the makings of something really special. He's had a great education from Martinez and from Brendan Rodgers. And there's the passion there as well. I think to do well for someone who's been so integral to the club's history in the last 10 years, this remarkable rise. So I think Gary Monk deserves a lot of credit. But at the same time, I think we should remember that Swansea are a good team. They're in a slightly false position in the league. And on that sort of occasion, in their first proper run in Europe for so long, against one of the big names in Italian football, in European football, they were always likely to really have the bit between their teeth, and that's what we saw last night.
Rory, with Swansea, a lot's been said about the midfield quality, the passing quality that they have. At the beginning of the season, though, quite a few people were very quick to get on the back of their new signing, Wilfred Bonny, who came in with a great goal-scoring record from Holland. How much have you been turned around on Bonny, or did you maybe keep the faith that this new striker was going to be able to come in and adjust eventually to the Premier League, considering the record that he had joining us?
Yeah, mind you, it's a bit of a risk, isn't it, having a good scoring record in Holland. I think it's about 50-50 for players who scored a lot of goals in Holland and how well they fare in the Premier League for every Van Nistelrooy and Alfonso Alves. I've not seen a vast amount of Bonny, I will admit, and even by reputation, a lot of people in Dutch football and scouts from English clubs who'd watched him were impressed. He seemed to have all the attributes you need, the power, the pace, the ability to hold the ball up, great shot on him as well, with both feet, I think, Bonny. He seemed to have all the attributes. There was a question mark, I guess, over the price tag, which was really heavy. It was really high price for a team like Swansea. I thought he'd do as he's done, to be honest. I thought he'd start relatively slowly and get better. But I still think that they're a much better side with Michy. I think we've seen this season quite how important Michy is to him. And I think that everything at Swansea would have been really different this year, including Michael Laudrup's future, had Michy stayed fit. And that's a huge loss for them. Bonny's come in and he's getting better and better. There's a huge amount of potential there. I think the problem in midfield is almost that there's two or three players there who the pieces don't seem to quite fit. There's some good footballers. Leon Britton's a good footballer. Jonathan Guzman I really like, although he's not the hardest worker in the world. Shelby's kind of in and out. He sometimes looks like a world beater, sometimes really doesn't. They don't quite look like they've gelled. That's been the problem. I've seen quite a lot of Swansea this season. They don't quite look like they're all there as a team. And that will need work from Gary Monk over the next 3 or 4 months, and then presumably if he does well, as he started well, over the summer and next season. They look a little bit like they're in transition, Swansea, between the team they were that Rodgers brought up and the team that maybe they can be when they become a sort of established Premier League side. So it's a bit, slightly difficult time for them, but no, I think there's signs of promise, and that is testament to Gary Monk's good start, but also it shouldn't be forgotten that Laudrup did a lot of good work at Swansea. They weren't in a weak position when he left.
Now, we all know about the European hangover that can take place after these Europa League fixtures on a Thursday night, and I'm sure Swansea wouldn't have wanted to have had Liverpool straight after a game against Napoli in midweek. Brendan Rodgers returning to his old side once again. How much of an advantage does that give Liverpool, or has this Swansea team now changed enough to kind of make Rodgers' knowledge of the squad and the playing style maybe slightly more redundant?
No, I'm sure that the Rodgers will be familiar with pretty much everyone at Swansea. As you say, they have got some new players, but the patterns are still the same. The way they play is very similar. Gary Monk is, as I say, a protege of his. So I'm sure that Rodgers will be familiar with Swansea, and the holes in his knowledge will be filled in by Liverpool scouts. It's not an ideal fixture, as you say, for Swansea going to Anfield on a Sunday after a Thursday, which everyone seems to find really difficult. I've never quite understood why that's more difficult than playing Wednesday, Saturday, but everyone says it is, so I presume it must be. It's not the fixture they'd want, but they will take a lot of confidence from the way they played against Napoli, who are actually quite similar to Liverpool in the sense that they're really good going forward, Napoli, but they struggle a little bit in defence, and that could be true of Liverpool as well.
I was going to ask you about the Wednesday-Saturday Champions League hangover, but I guess we will both remain kind of in the dark on that one, and why Europa League is far more difficult to handle on a Sunday.
Genuinely don't get it. I think it's a really interesting subject. You speak to anybody in football and they will tell you Thursday, Sunday is harder than Wednesday, Saturday. When you ask the supplementary question why, they can't give you an answer. I think the one thing with the Europa League that is a factor that's not psychological is that the travel has to be to further away places. So you look at Spurs, who've been to, I'm not going to try and pronounce the name of the town, but to play Dnipro in the Ukraine. That's a longer journey than, say, going to Rome or to Madrid or to Barcelona or to Munich. That's a factor, but the Thursday-Sunday thing baffles me completely.
I suppose Tottenham will have an even bigger hangover coming back from that Dnipro game as well, especially Soldado. Is anybody putting him on the scrap heap yet? It's not been a great first season at Spurs, and missing an open goal last night as well.
Yeah, he struggled a bit, and I've got to admit to an error of judgment, because when Spurs signed Soldado and City signed Negredo, who both had remarkably similar records in Spain, similar levels of international experience, I thought Soldado would be the one who would thrive, because he's very much a penalty box player. He doesn't do anything else. He is just lethal in the penalty area, despite what we saw last night. And I thought Negredo, whose kind of advantage in Spain had always been his aerial power, might struggle to replicate that in the Premier League. Now, obviously, that was completely wrong, and I hold my hand up to that. Soldado, though, to be fair to him, he's not really... He doesn't seem to come into that much criticism. I think his overall play's not been too bad. His confidence just looks completely shot at the moment in front of goal. Sherwood is standing by him. He says that he's got a role to play. He thinks he'll come good. He just needs that proverbial one or two goal spell, that little flurry that gets his confidence back. But you do wonder, actually, with Soldado, whether if it does continue this drought until the end of the season, whether Spurs might have to look at it and think that they can cut their losses. Someone like Atletico Madrid will need a striker in the summer because Diego Costa will leave. If they think that they can get a decent return on their money from Soldado rather than carrying in front of the season and potentially seeing him lose all value, Spurs might have to look at that. It's a real shame because I think he's a good player, Soldado. But the problem is, you have to have a team set up to play to his strengths, and for a long time this season, Spurs haven't had that.
I was going to say, has he been more of a sufferer of the circumstances behind him in the midfield, with the amount of rotation, the inconsistency in that player playing just behind him down the centre of the pitch that kind of AVB was berated for by the fans at points? I mean, is it all really Soldado's fault? A lot of the time it doesn't appear like he's had a lot of service and consistent service from the same player.
I agree with you completely. I think part of the problem is that under VS Boas, that he was playing two what are now termed inverted winners, which is a terrible phrase, and this means people playing wide who aren't on their natural side, which meant that they were cutting inside and shooting or clipping little through balls through, and that's not really how Soldado plays. Soldado is, like I say, he comes alive in the penalty area. He needs winners going down the flanks and whipping balls in, probably not to his head but to his feet, so that he can get those 2 or 3 yards on his defender, because his movement in the box is superb. He needs that sort of service. What he's had at Spurs is either these inverted winners who are shooting, so he's left to sort of gobble up scraps, or Christian Eriksen, who's been more impressive, trying to thread through balls for him. Soldado's not the quickest, and in a league where there's a lot of very fast defenders, it's not that he's slow, he's just not lightning fast. Mm. That's not going to work for him. So I think to an extent it's not his fault in the sense that he probably wasn't the player that Spurs needed to buy for the rest of their team, and that is what we're seeing over the course of the season. That said, when you miss from 4 yards out, that is your fault. But that, I suppose, is a function of his confidence, and if his confidence is low, he's going to miss those chances. Just strike to snatch at them. They lose that coolness in front of goal that they need. And in Spain, Soldado was superb at. He was absolutely lethal for Valencia. But the question is, Spurs signed a good player. The question is whether they signed the good player that they needed and who fitted in.
Rory, let's have a quick look to the weekend as well, some of the games coming up. And one of the fixtures that's actually caught my eye a bit is Newcastle against Aston Villa. Two teams that are either boiling hot or freezing cold. How much pressure is Adam Pardew under with this three-game losing streak that Newcastle are on at the moment? I mean, they've been called at points the worst-run club in Premier League football at the moment. Do you agree with that? And do you think Pardew is in danger of losing his job if results don't pick up?
There's a fair few teams who'd compete for that title of worst-run club in football, wouldn't they? And Villa, funnily enough, have been in the same situation before. I don't think Pardew's under immediate pressure. I'm sure he'll see out the season. Because basically, he's kind of given a bit of leeway because the fans, I think, are furious at the performances. And you lose at home, get beat, get humiliated at home, really, by your nearest rivals who are in the middle of a relegation battle. The fans are going to be furious. Pardew himself said after the defeat against Spurs that it looked like Newcastle weren't fighting, and that's criminal, really, for a manager to say that about his own players, partly because it's his job to make sure they do fight. He'll be looking for a reaction, but Pardew, I think, is in a sense in a fortunate position, which is that everything that goes wrong with Newcastle is blamed on Mike Ashley and the way he runs the club, which is chaotic and baffling and almost seems like some sort of elaborate joke, because as soon as Newcastle get kind of any sort of stability, any sort of regular path, they just look like they're a normal club, they're kind of getting somewhere, Ashley does something ridiculous. And it's happened so many times that you have to assume he's doing it deliberately, that he almost doesn't want the club to be stable, which is a ridiculous assertion for me to make. But you look at the pattern of his behaviour, it's the only conclusion you can draw. So I think Pardew is fortunate in that sense that the bad results are blamed not on him, but on kind of factors outside his control. But if they continue, and if Newcastle starts slipping down the table, which they could do, because teams like Swansea and Villa might start to put little runs together and close that gap. Southampton, I think, will go clear of Newcastle at some point. They'll finish eighth. And Newcastle could slip down kind of 12th, 13th. They're obviously not going to get relegated, but that could be enough for the fans to turn on Pardew as well if things keep going bad. And the issue is that, as you say, Villa, although they are capable of being terrible, are also capable of being really quite effective, especially away from home, admittedly. And if Newcastle catch them on the wrong day, then that's potentially Villa going to start reeling Newcastle in.
What is a Premier League weekend without talking about Manchester United and David Moyes, given the break, obviously, with the FA Cup and their trip to Dubai? But talk of Van Persie being happier in the Dutch squad at the moment, Chicharito saying that he could have left but wasn't allowed to in January. Now the rumours coming out from a lot of the players are becoming very unsettled at United, and they take on Toni Pulis's side that are just built, Toni Pulis's side, to kind of hold off and defend at home against the big clubs and get some sort of result. Is this going to be another disappointing weekend for United away at Palace?
It's a tricky weekend for United. I think they might win, actually. I think Palace are not... They are, as you say, Pulis has done a remarkable job. He bought very well in January, but I'm not sure Palace have got the quality to beat even a struggling Manchester United. But you're right, there's no question United are at that stage now where things are starting to mount up. They're starting to see the effect of their problems. Players are talking about being unsettled. Players are never unsettled when they're winning. I'm sure Chicharito had loads of chances to go when United were winning titles and challenging for titles, and I'm sure he didn't bat an eyelid. The problem is that now, obviously, United are struggling. He's not playing. He's not happy. The chances to move come in. And if United, as is their right, say, no, you're not allowed to leave, which is normal for a club if they don't want to sell a player, then he will start to agitate in public for the fact that he wants to leave. And I think that is a natural function of what's happened to Manchester United this season. Their temporary loss of status, the fact that they're almost certain to miss out on the Champions League, I think. If you look at the number of points they need to get to overhaul not just Liverpool but Tottenham as well, it is relatively unlikely they'll get back in the Champions League. And David Moyes has to try and control all of these factors whilst also building his own team, a team in his own image, and trying to get their season back on track so they at least have some sort of positive end to cling on to in the summer. It's a really difficult situation at Manchester United, and no matter how much money you pay Wayne Rooney, you can't hide from that.
It's going to be a bit of a boost, at least, to see Rooney signing that new deal today at Manchester United, but a very rocky season indeed. Rory, an absolute pleasure to have a chat with you today about a bit of Premier League and Europa League fallout from last night. We always enjoy cracking you on the show, mate, and we look forward to catching up with you very soon indeed, my man.
Thank you for having me.
Cheers, Rory. Take care and have a
good
weekend.
Cheers, mate. Take care.
Rory Smith from The Times joining us here on World Football Daily, kicking it back at the end of the week. Taking a pretty leisurely affair, I think, through into this weekend, to be honest, because after the excitement of the Champions League, looking at the fixtures from around Europe, I'm excited. I'm always excited to sit and watch football. But if I think I've got Bologna against Bologna against Roma tonight, tomorrow, as my Serie A viewing, you know, that's not going to get me out of my seat. Valladolid against Levante is my Friday night Spanish game. You know, I'm not rocking on that one. I'm covering Monaco against Reims tonight for Monaco TV. If anybody wants to check out, by the way, AS Monaco TV, you'll be able to hear me this evening commentating on the Reims game. I'm shamelessly plugging myself here. And Schalke against Mainz tonight. But you know, I'm not buzzing. I am looking forward to Everton against Chelsea. We should go into a bit of Premier League IKTS from this RAF, as we always do here on a Friday. But I am really looking forward to a bit of Chelsea and Everton. I should probably ask you how you're doing as well on this Friday, man.
I'm well, yeah, man, living the dream. I'm getting over my, you know, my my Champions League this week, and like you said, it is kind of tough to go back to just regularly play after looking at the Champions League. But I'm okay. Like you said, I'll just kind of leisurely stroll through my weekend of football and take in whatever kind of comes my way whenever the time is, you know, there and available. But other than that, you know, I got two games to play this weekend again. If you haven't seen my YouTube video, for some more shameless plugs, I'll go ahead and give you mine. I recently did the Evo Power Boot in action because I have put it to good use so far. It's played in three games. Very excited about them. And, it's, you know, weekend two of my two games a weekend schedule, which I'm absolutely loving, man. Absolutely loving.
Very nice, mate. Very nice. I do hope they can improve your play, ref, because from what I hear, you ain't got no game, son. But going into this weekend, you know, it's kind of like coming out of the All-Star game and expecting everybody to be dunking left, right and centre and alley-ooping with their teammates and all that kind of thing. You only get that in Los Angeles with the Clippers, really, but in regular NBA play. But, it's coming off Champions League is like that. We're expecting... We were spoilt this week with Arsenal, Bayern and Barca City and Milan Atletico.
If there was a Lob City in European soccer juice, who would you put that to? Who would you give that title to?
I think in terms of scoring the most spectacular goals this season so far, I'm going with PSG.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Some of Zlatan's strikes this season have just been unbelievable. I mean, we all remember that ridiculous back heel that he scored, and Cavani does it as well. It's like having DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin, you know, both big finishers from inside, and then you've also got, you know, the creative play that surrounds them. You know, you've got your Chris Paul probably with a kind of Verratti or somebody like that, or Jose Lucas Moura there. So I think the LA Clippers are the PSG of the NBA.
I like that. Yeah.
And they're in a league where everybody else around them is pretty much duff, even though some of them have got some like good old reputations that they cling on to, aka the LA Lakers.
No. I mean, the Lakers are nobody else in
life. Are nobody. League. Yes, they are nobody in the NBA.
Are nobody this year. Yes, and potentially into 2016, as this was supposed to be our big summer. For free agencies and whatnot, and people opting out of their contracts, and LeBron coming to Los Angeles.
Yeah, bringing in somebody big like Dwight Howard, like you did, and look how that ended up. And now he's in the All-Star game, but representing Houston, which is, so he is good. Just the LA Lakers made him.
I think that's a stretch. Good is the stretch there.
Dwight Howard's an animal.
I wouldn't want Dwight Howard back ever.
You are kidding me. You wouldn't take Dwight Howard on form back in Los Angeles.
No chance.
I would have Dwight Howard, an on form Dwight Howard, any day of the week as my starting center. The most dominant center in the game since Shaquille O'Neal.
If he's in the right mood, if he's happy,
if he's not in Los Angeles, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, and not playing for the coach that he specifically wants. I mean, he's the biggest prat of them all, Jesus. I mean, I don't. He's worse than Kobe Bryant because, you know, he cries about what he wants, and then if he doesn't get what he wants, then he picks up his bags and leaves. And what kind of professional is that?
Kind of like a Zlatan Ibrahimovic, actually.
Maybe.
That'd be quite a good little thing to do over the weekend, actually, a comparison of NBA teams and players to their footballing counterparts. You know, you'd have, I guess LeBron would probably be your Luis Suarez, infinite amount of skill, but goes down very easily and flops all over the place. Dwayne Wade would probably be your, I don't know, it could be like a Steven Gerrard in terms of, you know, this was his kingdom and then somebody else came in, took it away from him, i.e. Suarez at Liverpool, but still crops up with great performances and a great link player. And then, you know, Chris Bosh is like Jordan Henderson, the guy that everybody thought was going to be fantastic. And then, you know, compared to the other two, has done very little considering. Although I will say Bosh was a big player back in the finals. What, last year, Bosh was a big player in that playoff run. But, you know,
Chris... I mean, look, and that's being very harsh to Jordan Henderson. I think Jordan Henderson looks much more handsome than the... What would you call Chris Bosh, man? Is he like a velociraptor or something? Like, what does he look like? What kind of animal does... A turtle? A turtle, maybe? A very tall, lanky turtle?
I have to say, I've never done the animal face game with Chris Bosh. I'll have to look at and study a picture of Chris Bosh for a day or two, and I'll come back to you on Monday with an answer to that question. What animal does Chris Bosh most look like? I can kind of see the turtle where you're coming from now. You know, have you ever seen The Land Before Time?
Yes.
It looks like the dinosaur that's always just chewing on the leaves. The
A thinner version, but yes, yeah, Spike is who you're thinking of.
Spike, yeah. It reminds me a little bit of Spike, maybe, from The Land Before Time.
Now, I know this is way too far of a tangent, but did you know that there's like a Land Before Time like 12 practically by now?
Really?
Yeah. I mean, guaranteed there's at least 6 of them, I'm pretty sure. Because
have they caught up to time yet? Is it now just the land in time?
The land in time.
We've done so many prequels, we finally got to at least get to time. Like, yeah, right, let's go to time, see what it's like there. Ah, oh, it sucks. All right, let's go back to The Land Before Time. Man, those movies were awesome. Sharp Tooth and all that. Yeah.
Littlefoot is no longer little, he's just Foot.
He's just Foot. And actually he's got a missus now, and they are the Feet family.
The Feet family.
We are getting far too distracted. Football to Land Before Time in about 3 steps. That is 3 steps away from Kevin Bacon, more like 3 steps away from the Land Before Time here on World Football Daily. Let's get into some Premier League action. Talking of Jordan Henderson, his Liverpool side, they take on Swansea this weekend on Sunday. Swansea, absolutely fantastic last night, as we said already in the show, against Napoli. Deserved to win that.
Well, look, I mean, it was a good 0-0 draw. It was entertaining.
Don't start saying that. Swansea dominated them. Absolutely dominated them. Rayner and Cabral were, you know, forced into saves left, right and centre last night. And Swansea on another night, again, much like Milan, except they were able to hold on to the 0-0, were a fantastic passing dominant side yesterday evening at the Liberty Stadium. I can't speak highly enough of the performance that they put in, considering this is a side that, you know, a few weeks ago, this sort of performance seemed a million miles away. You know, we were giving them love in IKTS based partly just on that ingrained system that they have in at the club, you know, because you always knew that these games were, you know, in the realms of possibility with the side that they've got. But the fact that that they've been able to produce on a big stage this sort of performance against a good, you know, Napoli side. Let's not forget, this wasn't like the complete B team that Napoli put out. You know, they've got Insigne in there, Higuain, Hamsik, Callejon, Pandev coming off the bench. I mean, this is a great side, and that defense looked shoddy yesterday evening. I don't know how you're going to be able to argue that this is a good 0-0 when Swansea will feel like they should have come away with the advantage.
Well, what I meant was
advantage.
That it was a good 0-0 for the neutral to watch. I mean, like, I was okay with watching this. I watched two games yesterday. Well, I watched them back, you know, screen to screen, I guess, not back to back. Yeah, but I mean, I was entertained by it. You know, again, maybe the ignorant American may not be so entertained by it, but you know, I was thoroughly kind of entertained by it. I completely agree with you. I think, you know, Swansea might have wanted to get more out of it. I think that they should have got more out of it. I'm surprised they didn't. I was very shocked with just, in general, how Rafa Benitez and his teams still struggle at set pieces. There were several a corner that, you know, the the what's it called? It's not man marking. It's zonal. Marking in space. Yeah, zonal marking. The zonal marking just wasn't coming through for them at all. I mean, it's just surprising how that kind of trait of Rafa Benitez kind of carries over into every team he's with.
Well, it was very surprising as well, though, I think, last night, how bad the defense was when you consider how good a tactician Benitez is and how highly regarded he is for being able to build solid defenses. You know, Benitez is known in England for being a guy that was able to, you know, build Champions League winning sides and potential title winners that never really came to fruition in England off the back of having a very solid defensive unit and being comfortable at the back. And suddenly last night they went and fell apart. You know, they were getting pulled all over the place by the passing of Swansea. Very surprising indeed to see Napoli getting taken apart as they were yesterday evening, I thought, mate.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. And I mean, they'll be happy to go home with, you know, the 0-0, I think.
Napoli will think like they've escaped something there.
And yeah, exactly.
I think
exactly.
We're all surprised that we're even saying that this morning, that Napoli escaped something. Because I thought this game last night, yes, you know, Laudrup's gone and they brought in Mr. Monk, but I didn't expect Swansea to come out with the vinegar, I want to say. I love that as an adjective. You know, they had some real vinegar about them. But yeah, coming out with such vinegar in their play and a real quick step to them. As I say, back to that brilliant passing football that we've seen. You know, I'm not going to say Barca-esque. Let's not, you know, kid ourselves here about Swansea. But, you know, wonderful little triangles up and down the pitch. And Napoli didn't have an answer for it. And I think Benitez, you could see at one point, Rafael Benitez was kind of, you know, yelling and screaming into his hands on the pitch. On the sideline of the pitch. You know, he was getting so frustrated by it. And I'm sure he didn't like the fact that he had to bring in Reina for Rafael Cabral as well at half-time. Because, you know, you don't want to bring in a keeper that's cold. Coming off the bench, a keeper's going to be cold. You know, he's had his pre-match warm-up, sure, but, you know, sat there for 45 minutes. How often do you see a keeper warming up on the sideline until they're called into action type thing? You know, Reina was going in cold for that. And against the attack that Swansea was putting on, I'm sure Benitez wasn't a big fan of having to make that change. Luckily for Rafa, Pepe Reina is a quality enough keeper. Do you think he's going to go and make this move permanent now, depart from Liverpool and head to Napoli? Apparently a $4 million price tag's been put on his head for...
Yeah, I can see that, man. I mean, because also it's not like, one, Liverpool are missing him, and two... It also seems like Liverpool are constantly looking for, you know, for other kind of alternatives and options as well. So I do think that he's probably going to make that move. And if he doesn't make, you know, if he's not happy there, he can always just go to MLS. Because I mean, look at Julio Cesar. Although beaten in his first preseason match appearance for Toronto FC, I think it was like 3-0 too. there is always that option, and I think that he would be just fine here, and actually quite greatly appreciated as a goalkeeper, and actually have a lot of competition considering how strong the goalkeeping pedigree is here in the States.
He'd have competition, but whether he'd get the test that he needs in Major League Soccer is another question, I think. But £4 million isn't bad for a keeper of Reina's quality, that's for sure. I know keepers are, you know, highly undervalued, unless it's a very young keeper like a De Gea or somebody like that. Keepers, to me, are highly undervalued in the transfer market compared to other players. You know, you get all this money thrown about for strikers and midfields and number nines and all that kind of malarkey. But I seriously think that the goalkeepers should warrant as big a price tag. If you can put a massive pair of hands in between the posts, you know, you're sitting pretty indeed. And as I say, the only big transfers I can recall of the last few years of goalkeepers, I think Neuer, De Gea, Petr Cech probably comes into that as well. That's about it in terms of big money goalkeepers. Unless I'm wrong, let us know. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter. 310-909-8483 is the rant line. Of course, the Facebook page as well is where you can find us. Let's get into IKTS, Raf, because we've been skirting around the subject a little bit.
That's fine, because otherwise I'm going to get into Maradona starting for a a fifth-tier Argentinian side.
I do want to talk about Maradona because David De Gea has apparently been flirting with Maradona's very young and almost inappropriately young fiance, and he is not happy about it. We saw the pictures of Maradona with the Man United players out in Dubai, and it's all hugs and, oh my God, look, the legend Maradona. And apparently Maradona is very cheesed off after De Gea spent a fair bit of time flirting with the Argentinian legend's missus. That's one person you probably don't want to tick off. Of all the people in the world, that you don't want to be renowned.
Probably, he's probably got some connections. I mean,
well, not just
considering
that,
the time that he spent in Napoli. I mean, you never know what kind of contacts he has, both
Italian
mafia and even South American cartels.
Yeah, you don't want to be talking about like the world's greatest football players, Raf. You don't want to be sat around a dinner table and somebody says, "Well, who do you think, Maradona or Pele?" And David De Gea has to say, "Well, I've got to go with Pele because Maradona hates me." I mean, you know, nobody wants to have to say that sentence. One of the greatest players in football. Oh yeah, he hates me. Why? What the hell? What? I mean, it's a great little talking point, but it's not a nice sentence that you ever really want to say. Let's get into our KTS though, Raf. Starting off with the enthralling tie, Chelsea against Everton this weekend, the first game on Saturday.
How enthralling this 1-0 Chelsea victory will be is quite, you know, quite exaggerated. I hope you guys realize. It won't be that exciting. I think that Chelsea will probably shut it down. Even look to Chelsea to rest some of their bigger players, or look at the team and realize that maybe some of these players won't be playing midweek next week. So I think Chelsea do come away with the 1-0 victory only because they have that class and the talent, I think, to kind of rise to the top. But ultimately, they'll probably be a little bit distracted and a little bit kind of taken by what's going on next week. It's Champions League still going on. It's, you know, let's keep our focus, boys.
A couple of losses in the last few games for Everton. It's going to be another one coming for me, Raf. But I'm going to give them a shout. You know, as you say, the Champions League distraction starting to crop up maybe for Chelsea. So with that in mind, I'm giving Everton at least a goal down at the Bridge on Saturday. I'm going to give them a 2-1 loss, though. Chelsea will be able to pull it through. They're still a team very much on fire, but that one eye is just going to be distracted. And they'll be thinking about the return of Didier Drogba as well. So let's move into Arsenal against Sunderland.
I got this as a 2-0 victory. I think that Arsenal take advantage of. And don't get me wrong, Sunderland have been in some decent form recently, but I feel like Arsenal need this win. They need to kind of, you know, we've said it before, they have an incredibly tough schedule ahead of them right now. This is one that they need to pick up. So I almost put my banker on it, but I think it's only a times two, so I didn't. 2-0 to the Arsenal.
2-0 Arsenal. I've got the exact same thing down at the Emirates. It's going to be revenge time, I think, for Arsenal on whoever steps in their way. They want to get rid of the bad news that was that Bayern Munich defeat in midweek. I was chatting with some Arsenal fans actually yesterday, and they were very downbeat after that Bayern game. Not just because of the missed penalty and the fact that they thought they could have, you know, come away with something there, but just the fact that they now felt the tie was completely out of reach. And I'm so surprised that, you know, 2-goal lead isn't that much. I know it's a bit different task going to the Allianz. We were talking about it a lot yesterday. But a 2-goal lead isn't that much. It's not like the be-all and end-all. We've seen stranger things happen in, you know, 20 minutes of football, let alone 90.
Absolutely.
Let's move into a battle at the bottom. Cardiff against Hull, two of the promoted sides from this season. Hull still creeping into that relegation battle. 3 points away from it at the moment. Cardiff firmly embroiled in it. And Fulham and Cardiff in danger of slipping away from everybody else. They're currently sat in 19th at the moment, Cardiff, with 22 points.
Yeah. You've kind of convinced me enough to think that Hull have enough to stay out of the relegation zone. I think they come away with a much needed, you know, 1-0 victory against the bottom feeders, and this kind of helps their hopes to stay in the Premier League this year.
It works for me at the moment. It's Cardiff, Fulham, and Norwich that are going to be the three that go down. You can put money on that, and you'll probably lose it. But But I don't think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to be able to pull this Cardiff team out of the slump that they're in. We've obviously seen Wilfried Zaha come in and make a bit of an impact. It'd be interesting to see the long-term impact he has on the remainder of the season, just 12 games remaining, of course. But I think Cardiff are going to be able to hold on for a point here at home, the home field advantage, but it's going to be nothing more than that, one all draw for Cardiff against Hull City against Stoke. Now, Stoke have a habit of being very organised and very bullish against these sorts of teams. But at the Etihad, City, probably like Arsenal, want to put on a bit of a show as well after a disappointing midweek. They've had an extra day than Arsenal to kind of rest up as well. I'm going with a big 3-0 win for Manchester City against Stoke.
They'll probably need to be testing out, see who they can replace Di Michaelis for. There's just players who want to make an impression as well. 3-0 I have for Man City. Again, would put my banker on this one just because it's pretty much money, but it's only times two.
What have we got next? West Brom against Fulham. Another battle at the bottom. Fulham on the bottom of the Premier League table, and now at the point where a win doesn't even get them out of the relegation zone. 4 points adrift of West Brom and Sunderland. The Baggies desperate to get 3 points to pull themselves away, and we're getting into 6-pointer games now, really, for these teams at the bottom come the end of this season. I don't think West Brom have got it under Pepe Mel. I fear for them. I really do. If it wasn't for Norwich, I would be very worried for the Baggies, but I don't think they're going to be able to do it. I think that Mitroglou's going to score opening game. I'm expecting him to start this weekend, and I expect him to bag two at the Hawthorns. I'm going West Brom 1, Fulham 2.
That's exactly what I have as a result, and I feel like we were probably having a lot of similar results for this week as well, which scares me. But yeah, no, that's what I got, and I really hope that Fulham figure out a way to get out of the relegation zone, because I do kind of have a soft spot for them, considering all the Americans who've been on that team. I just don't know if that's going to be possible. I'm really putting a lot of faith on Felix McGath to really pull these guys up and out of the relegation zone. And this might be a nice place to start.
What have we got next? West Ham against Southampton. A difficult trip for Southampton. West Ham are in a very good run of form at the moment, undefeated in their last four wins in their last six games for the Hammers. Allardyce, you know, the board has kept their faith with him when plenty of other boards would have chopped him off at the neck and let him roll down the hill and into the, I guess, the unemployment office. But but I really do think they made the right decision. As we said here on World Football Daily, you know, who else would you bring in? What if you were a struggling team and Sam Allardyce was available as a manager? You'd bring in Sam Allardyce to try and save your season. And so West Ham just let him do that, and they are back up towards the mid-table, although obviously 9 points adrift of Newcastle United, and still only 4 points off the relegation zone. It's so tight from 10th place down. It's unbelievable, the Premier League this season, as it always appears to be. I think the last 4 or 5 years now we've been looking at a Premier League table where the bottom half of the table is in a relegation battle with 10 games to go. I'm going to give the Hammers a 1-1 draw against Southampton. The Saints will go marching on to an extent. But I think they'll take a point at West Ham, and I think West Ham will be happy with a point against Southampton as well. 1-1.
I have Southampton coming away with a 1-0 victory.
Well, you're wrong, so don't worry.
Yeah, I know. I mean that's fine. I think I am kind of just trying to do that so I can, you know, be contrary to whatever you're saying at this point. I don't believe in West Ham. I don't think that they have, you know, what it takes. I know they just, I don't feel it, Juice. I don't feel it. I know that Andy Carroll, you know, is not playing. It's just, there's not enough. There's not enough there for me. I think Southampton have the talent and ability to beat them. I think West Ham will just make it harder for them.
Yeah, I still don't give them the 3 points at the moment, though, Raf. We will disagree there. Palace against Manchester United. Now, this is an interesting one, because I've been saying United are going to be back on form, and I know the week that I don't put faith in Moyes is going to be the week that United fans will be giving me abuse on Twitter and telling me how they were never going to drop points at Crystal Palace, etc. I'm going 1-1 Palace. Pulis's men know how. It was a great phrase, turn of phrase that a Stoke fan used the other day, which was Pulis knows binary football in that it's very simple and it's 1-0, 0-1, 1-0, 0-0. You know, not goals, not conceding goals, not scoring goals, doing enough to get the job done. And it sums up what Tony Pulis does. He's getting Palace out of this and away from the bottom three. And I'm going to give him credit and give him a point against Manchester United at home in the last game on Saturday.
Well, with the news of the news of you know, the Rooney deal and all that good stuff, you got to think that they have enough and plenty of talent. Yada 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 yada. They have to have something good going for them. Crystal Palace is a nice kind of softball for them heading into the Champions League. There's too much good stuff going for them right now for this weekend. I think they do come away with a 2-0 victory, and I have my banker on this one because they have it. They have it as a times three.
I had that with Fulham, though, mate, remember? And they were bottom of the league. And away at Old Trafford. Come on, Raf.
Hello.
The bogey team. Yeah. Raf, you're just lying. There's no need. There's no need to lie. Okay. But, yeah, let's move on then into Sunday's games. Liverpool against Swansea. Now, for me, it's a European hangover, and Brendan Rodgers knows Swansea inside out. I'm going 2-0 Liverpool at Anfield. Simple stuff. And this is where results like this are going to prove that Liverpool not being in Europe is a big boost to their title credentials this season.
Sure. I mean, I'm going to be a little bit nicer in giving Swansea a goal, but yeah, it's going to be 2-1 Liverpool as well. Yeah, pretty straightforward.
Pretty straightforward. Newcastle take on Aston Villa. Another midday, 1:30 kickoff in the UK on Sunday. I'm going with Newcastle on this one. I can't bring myself to put any more faith in Paul Lambert and his side. They're so erratic. Whereas Newcastle, three losses on the bounce. Pardew will be desperate to turn things around. Newcastle having just an absolute disaster off the pitch. I think on the pitch is they need to start getting some things right once again. They've been going through purple patches, and if you don't know what purple patches, it's kind of to do, it's having your best run, isn't it? You know, if you're having a purple.
I don't know. That's why you're telling this to me. I've never heard of purple patches.
Well, I know in Formula One motor racing, if somebody goes purple, it means they're putting in a personal best on the timing sheet. So and it means they go. It's not just personal best. I think it's probably the best run of the session as well at the moment. If their times,
you obviously commentate a lot of different things, Juice.
Do you ever
find yourself kind of using, you know, phrases from one sport in a different one?
No, or? And that's one thing why I used to despise early U.S. soccer commentary, because they used to use ice hockey phrases and things like that. You know, the five hole when it went through the keeper's legs, and I just really disliked that. Not because I don't like the phrase. In ice hockey, it works fine, but in soccer, it seemed so strange to me. That was all. So I could never get into it. I tried to do it as little as possible. But purple patches is a real saying. Trust me on that. Right. Newcastle going through this need to get into another purple patch as they've had earlier on in the season, and I can't stop saying it for some reason now as well.
I got Newcastle at Aston Villa as a 2-2 draw. And I hope you talk to Rory about this, because you know there's just so much crap that surrounds Newcastle. I mean, everything from their PR team coming out and, you know, banning another media outlet for a story that was written about them, to Mike Ashley potentially selling his team to McMahon of World Wrestling Federation or whatever it's called these days. It is an absolute circus up there, and I just think that, you know, these are two teams that I'm sick and tired of putting faith in. So I'm just going to kind of, you know, let it go and give them a draw, 2-2.
It's 2-0 Newcastle, I'm telling you. You can't trust Villa these days. Although on the road, they are better. I will give them that. Norwich take on Tottenham in the final game of the weekend. I have Norwich to go down in my book, but European hangover for me again. Tottenham don't do well with these sorts of things. So away from home as well, I'm giving Norwich a 1-1 draw.
That's very, very kind of you. I as much as I think that Tottenham might be kind of coming off of a little bit of a hangover from Europe, they'll probably come away with a 1-0 victory, in my opinion. That's where I got in my scoreline.
Let's see who is the victor on Monday, ref, when we return. I think it's going to be me. I wanted to get into as well the news last night before we leave the show. Touched on it earlier on, of course, and we are getting towards the end of our Friday session of World Football Daily, Raf. But the news from Major League Soccer this week that they are going to be purchasing Chivas USA.
Ah, good one. Yeah. I can't believe I almost forgot about that. But good. Thanks for bringing that up.
And then looking to sell it on. They're going to build a new stadium and keep the team in Los Angeles. They're going to rebrand it. We'll be playing under the name of Chivas USA for the 2014 season. But after that, it's going to be given a different name. It will no longer be associated with Chivas Guadalajara and Jorge Vergara and Angelica Fuentes. I apologize if I've got those names wrong at all there. Will be, as I say, no longer the owners anymore. MLS will operate the club and are looking for new buyers. We've been talking about this. You've been saying that you think that it's a waste having them in Los Angeles with the Galaxy there and maybe move the team somewhere else but keep the Chivas name. And they've almost gone the complete opposite of your idea, Raf. Not Major League Soccer, not listening to you. And they're going to guarantee keeping the team but giving it its own stadium. I mean, do you think building a new stadium, I can't imagine both teams would move into it. So I'm assuming Chivas will have their own place, which is great to get out of the shadow of the LA Galaxy because, you know, you say StubHub Arena or the arena formerly known as the Home Depot Center and people kind of instantly assume the LA Galaxy. Whereas Chivas to have their own, maybe smaller ground, which means there's less pressure to, there's more pressure to fill it, but there's less pressure to get, you know, an immense number of fans coming through the stand, coming through the turnstiles as maybe the Galaxy would get or do get. You know, I've been to Chivas and they close off one complete end plus the top tiers of the ends down the side as opposed to the Galaxy that, you know, at least have the majority of that bottom tier
right,
completely full for the games that I've seen down there at StubHub. And I think this is at least positive for moving the team that will soon to be known as the team formerly known as Chivas USA. I think it's a good step in trying to kind of reinvigorate the franchise slightly. But it all depends as well, don't you think, on the right owners coming in?
Right. I think there's actually a lot that depends on what's going on. And I think a lot hasn't necessarily been kind of released yet. I'm really hoping that there's more kind of thought that has gone into this that you know, like I said, hasn't been made public. There's a lot of people that, there's just a lot of news and rumors that have been kind of going around here in Los Angeles. I think it's Kroenke, Arsenal's boss,
been linked to it, but it's been said by Major League Soccer that Kroenke will not be buying Chivas USA and be involved in it. So Major League Soccer have been very quick to say that Stan Kroenke will not have a second.
But one of the things that he has done recently was buy basically a bunch of land right next to the old Hollywood Park, I believe. And so like there was talk about, you know, him bringing in the Los Angeles Rams back to Los Angeles, of course.
I was going to say, that's where the original kind of new stadium idea came for the Oakland Raiders before Al Davis moved them back to Oakland, wasn't it, when they were in at Los Angeles, and he wanted to build basically a brand new mega stadium down by Hollywood Park. And then when that didn't come to fruition is when he started, you know, saying, oh, I'm going to move it to here, I'm going to move the Raiders here, and in the end moved them back to Oakland with the promise of a new stadium, and has never been given that. Al Davis was never given that. So,
right. So I don't know. I'm interested to see where the stadium ends up going. You know, there's a lot still to be kind of worked out, I think.
A conflict of interest if Kroenke had been allowed to
considering his connection with Colorado Rapids. Yeah, that's exactly what I thought, like right off the bat. But I also, I mean, there could also be the potential, and I'm not sure how this would work. I almost think, well, never mind. I just wonder whether or not there would be a Los Angeles LAFC of Orange County, like the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. There could be something like that that's in the works. I mean, that's kind of really far-fetched. I'm pulling that one way out of left field.
The Hollywood on my Stars, own. They'll be called. The LA Hollywood Stars or something like that.
Sure.
That'd be terrible.
But it makes you wonder. I mean, there's LA is a big place, sure. There's a lot to LA, but so is Southern California. I was talking to Gio about this yesterday. I still think that there would be better to be in San Diego. San Diego has a huge, huge soccer kind of infrastructure there already with like youth soccer, Cal South in general. There's a lot of talented players that are brought up in San Diego. So, I mean, I like that idea. They could also even go a little bit more inland somewhere, San Bernardino, where, you know, who knows? I'm throwing places out there. There is a ton of potential no matter what. And I mean, just because I'm not the biggest fan of two teams in LA doesn't mean that it's not possible and that it's not a successful business venture possibility, sir.
I think it's good for Major League Soccer that Don Garber's come out and released this open letter, if you will, to Chivas USA fans, you know, all 17 of them, and said that the club is going to have like an experienced sports executive brought in to serve as the president during this kind of time of upheaval, so to speak. They're going to be looking for new ownership that will establish the right vision and plan for the team. And I think this is good for Major League Soccer that it shows that the league is almost not accepting failure with its franchises now, as opposed to kind of moving a franchise out of somewhere and like we've seen in the past down in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, what they're doing is they're saying, no, we just need to try a new approach to this market. You know, this is still a good market that we can capitalize on, the Latino market possibly in the Los Angeles and the surrounding area is still probably the kind of demographic they're looking to pull through the turnstiles at whatever Chivas become. But at the same time, I think it would have been very easy for Major League Soccer to have said, look, what we're going to do is we're going to make plans for Chivas to move somewhere else around the country to a new market and we'll have a new owner come in. And instead, what they're saying is this team is going to stay in Los Angeles. We are committed to building them a brand new stadium in Los Angeles and we're going to make sure that we get this right, because the Guadalajara Chivas USA link hasn't done anything to help Chivas. It was worth giving a shot. You know, it was a good idea. It was a novel idea to pull that off, but it hasn't worked in the end, and it's been disappointing. I think for everybody all around.
I think it kind of harmed both sides. You know, the Mexican team and the American team. So yeah. Not good in my opinion at all.
It always worries me when I hear the phrase rebranding and new logo and all this sort of thing, because I get in, you know, US sports, there are a lot of, you know, you've got things like the Atlanta Falcons, Philadelphia Eagles for American football and stuff like that. You know, it really does, you know, it just fits the part, doesn't it? Because I think it's the tradition, you grow up with the kind of team name, animal name type thing or whatever it is, you know, but it does, you know, you'd never get the Manchester Chargers or something like that. I don't think ever being kind of brought in, because in general, football teams are given a name, you know, of the city, town, United, you know, those sorts of endings, that sort of thing. Rovers. So I think it's interesting to see what the rebrand would do, especially if they look to continue to kind of try and entice the Latin American market. Because you know you've got all these, the New England Revolution. It's just not a team name that would ever really come out, I don't think, in European football. Similarly, the Colorado Rapids, you know, you wouldn't get, I don't know, the Lake Garda Lakes or whatever in Italy or something like that. You know, it just wouldn't happen. So I always worry when I hear kind of Major League Soccer and rebranding, new name, just of it could sound really wishy-washy straight off the bat. And I think the trouble is, if it's not kind of a almost respected name, you know, because Chivas at the moment aren't a respected Major League Soccer side right now. And I apologize to Chivas fans when I say that, but it's true. If you think about the last few seasons that they've had, Chivas have been a team that there's been expectation for them to, we've done our rebuilding year, this is the time. You know, Scott French was saying it the other week, that Chivas this year, this coming year, could be a good year for them because they've retained good players from last season, and we'll be able to kind of make that step up. But at the same time, you know, we've been saying that for the last two seasons now, and we haven't seen that change around yet. So they're not really a respected side in terms of success at the Major League Soccer level. Now they lose that kind of iconic logo and branding of the Guadalajara logo, and say become something like the Hollywood Stars. I'm not saying that's an idea that I've heard or anything like that, but you know, to me, that wouldn't be a name that would kind of, oh, the Hollywood Stars. That sounds more gimmicky than it does sound like a professional football team. And unless there was a lot of money involved, I can't imagine a player from Europe thinking, yeah, I want to go and play at the Hollywood Stars. Whereas DC United, you know, that sounds like it has just a slightly more well-respected name, sounding name to it. And there is so much in the branding of these US soccer clubs that can affect how they're looked upon by both fans and players as well. And so it will be very interesting to see what happens with the future of Chivas USA. But I think it's a move that needed to be done because the whole system at this point wasn't working for Chivas. And sure, the Guadalajara connection was not paying off in any way, shape or form really for them.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, man. There's really nothing else to say about it because it just has been kind of an ongoing downward slope. So, yeah, man.
Good
for MLS. Good for MLS.
Let's hope that we can see Chivas succeeding in the near future, along with Major League Soccer continuing to grow as we always push to hope that Major League Soccer does end up becoming on a level paring with the European leagues. It's going to be a while, but there are glimmers of hope. I will say that, glimmers of hope. And we're going to be giving you a chance next week to win a signed Seattle Sounders T-shirt from the team. Seattle were good enough to send this across to us. The Seattle Sounders have signed a T-shirt for us, and we'll be giving you that chance to win that to our premium members on World Football Daily next week, as we will also be giving you the chance to win a signed SKC jersey. Yep, the Major League Soccer winners from last season. We've got a brand spanking new jersey ready and signed and ready to be shipped off to one lucky winner next week. We will sort that out as we go into next week. But until then, enjoy the weekend of what should be some cracking football coming our way. Chelsea Everton's on its way, coming up as our first game on Saturday. On Friday, tonight, we've got Schalke against Mainz. We've got Valladolid against Levante. And, of course, we've got Monaco against Reims. Then in French football on Saturday, we've got Marseille against Lorient. Valenciennes against Sochaux. Montpellier against Ajaccio. Guingamp against Nice. Bordeaux take on Evian. Bastia take on Saint-Etienne. And then on Sunday, Toulouse take on PSG. Nantes take on Rennes. And Lille take on Lyon. In Serie A, we've got Bologna taking on Roma, and then on Sunday, Livorno, Verona, Sampdoria, AC Milan. Used to be a classic clash. Hopefully it can produce some classic strikes from Balotelli once again if his shoulder's okay. Udinese take on Atalanta, Inter take on Cagliari, Chievo take on Catania, Juve take on Torino in the Turin derby, and Lazio take on Sassuolo. On Saturday in La Liga, Real Madrid take on Elche, Celta Vigo take on Getafe, Sociedad meet Barca. Should be an entertaining game, that one. Sociedad keeping their European hopes alive at the moment in La Liga. And Almeria take on Malaga. Real Vallecano meet Sevilla on Sunday, as do Betis take on Bilbao. Valencia take on Granada. And Osasuna take on Atletico Madrid. In the Bundesliga, Gladbach meet Hoffenheim. Stuttgart meet Berlin. Nuremberg take on Braunschweig. Freiburg take on Augsburg. Hamburg, they really do need a break, don't they? They now take on Borussia Dortmund this weekend. And Wolfsburg meet Bayer Leverkusen. A fantastic article by Ian Holyman saying that Aubameyang is the replacement for Robert Lewandowski. 13 goals this season for Emerick Pierre Aubameyang. Lewandowski with 14 so far in the Bundesliga. Is he the man to take over the mantle from the big Polish centre forward and for next season? And on Sunday, Eintracht Frankfurt take on Werder Bremen, and Hannover take on Bayern Munich. Those are your big games coming up from around the top leagues in Europe this weekend. We've already done the Premier League, of course, with IKTS, and it's only now time to give you our best wishes going into the weekend. We will catch you at the same time next week on Monday on World Football Daily. Until then, enjoy the weekend of football. We will catch you later, and get ready to win some cracking prizes coming up on WFD. Take care.